KFSR presents Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, featuring stories of people of the valley, produced by media communications and journalism students at Fresno State, 90.7 KFSR.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Fresno State Focus Radio Edition. I'm Jorge Rodriguez.
And I'm Cassidy Lopez. Today on our show, we look at how technology has made dating convenient but complicated.
Also, the burnout factor for athletes who start their sport at a young age.
And we'll look at sequelitis, a condition that's exacerbated by large amounts of money.
And the Fresno comedy scene, how humor's coming back to the downtown Fresno. We begin with online dating.
It's 2018, and technology has put more people behind a screen, even when it comes to dating. Remember back to when passing secret love notes of, do you like me, with a check yes or no box was a thing? Well, millennials don't have to face that fear of someone else receiving their little love note. Instead, they can simply swipe left or right on their phones. Are we doomed to become emotionless pod people who don't value what is truly in front of us? Monet Schotterbeck explores what it's like to date in 2018.
It's Friday night. You're alone at home. Your homework is done and you want to spend some time with that special someone, but how do you choose to reach out to them?
I would say texting is my preferred method of communication.
Texting, because it's faster.
Calling so people can tell if I'm being sarcastic or not.
Hard over text message.
Personally, I'd prefer the call, but I feel like it's easier to text because it's more convenient.
It would be calling because, like, I like to hear the person's voice. But with texting, you know, sometimes people text, like my friend, she texts in uppercase letters. So it seems like she's yelling at me, but she's not yelling. That's just how she texts. So I'd rather talk to someone over the phone. I think it's better. You can hear their tone.
I think most people, no matter the age, would agree conversations via text can often leave people lost in translation. But if that's the case, why do so many of us opt to engage in drawn-out text battles or sliding in a person's DMs rather than talk to them in person? What are we so afraid of?
Part of how we have adapted to technology is to use it a little bit to help mitigate that anxiety. Because to send the email or to send the text feels a little bit more comfortable than addressing the person either face-to-face or over the phone. So I think in a way we've adapted it so that we don't have to push ourselves out of that comfort zone.
Dr. Fallon Karch is an interpersonal family and communication theories professor at Fresno State.
One of the things that first pops out when you ask that question about one of the changes is actually how we develop those relationships. I was just having a conversation in my communication theory class about asking somebody on a date. And most of the students in that class are traditional college age, but I have a couple of non-traditional students who are from a different generation in that class as well. So I posed the question of, so what would we expect that date request to look like? And I wanted them to be as specific as possible because I was leading into a conversation about what happens when people violate our expectations.
When you've never met anybody but online and then you really finally meet them in person, they're someone completely different than who you text.
I spoke with criminology major at Fresno State, David Leon, about his experience in relationships facilitated through technology.
I've been catfished before, so I kind of know the business of like what it is to use an app to online date or to like meet people.
The reason I didn't go on Tinder for a while is because I took it as like a hookup app. And I think in the beginning it really was just for hookups. I had people on Tinder who were just like, hey, I'm just looking to have sex. I'm just like, well, thank you for your honesty. That's what I'm looking for. And that was it. I'm never going to be mad at someone for being blunt and forward. Thanks for not wasting my time. Carry on. Have a nice day.
That's not to say there aren't happy beginnings with finding love online. Fresno State student Kenisha Daly met her boyfriend of almost a year ago on the infamous Tinder app.
Going into Tinder, I did not at all expect to find a boyfriend, you know, especially like someone like I'm actually like in love with and like we're planning our future together and whatnot. But I think that also helps is not having too high of expectations. And that really takes away a lot of the stress of dating.
Dr. Karch further elaborates on the fact that there's less of a stigma now with utilizing technology and finding a partner. Using dating apps or social media just gives us innumerable options to develop relationships or connections with other people.
It creates additional opportunities for us relationally to stay in connection with people, to get a hold of people, to meet people. And that in and of itself is neutral, right? Or maybe swings a little bit to the positive. It's nice to have more options that I could take advantage of if I so choose. I think the key always is. So how am I utilizing it? So in the context of dating apps, am I being honest with other people about what it is that I'm looking for, right? Like, it's totally okay to say, I'm not looking for anything serious. I'm looking for something that's casual. I'm looking for something that it only is going to last one night. As long as I'm honest with that and the other person is able to decide, okay, that's what I'm looking for too, so we are a match, then I think it's perfectly appropriate.
With instant access to information and even potential romance, does that lessen our perception of value on said relationships?
Men are not into labels. I've never met a female who was just like, no, I'm just, you know, just see what happens, have a good time. But the guys don't want labels. Every woman I know wants a label. Yeah. So yeah. There's some discrepancies and expectations of our genders.
I am a college student, so I like living that life. I don't have any kids, so I am only responsible for myself.
Julian Cano, an accounting major at Fresno State, discusses the parameters of even if you're not an official couple, figuring out what that relationship will entail can save a lot of heartache and stress.
I definitely feel it's something that people need to talk about with one another. Are we going out? Or are we just seeing each other? Or are we just messing around? Mm-hmm. I think it's definitely worthwhile to figure out what kind of relationship you have with somebody else and the terms of said relationship. Mm-hmm. That makes everything run so much more smoothly.
Dr. Karch explains that the medium to which we as millennials communicate is quite different than previous generations. However, the presumption of transparency within the relationship is crucial to a healthy partnership, meaning labels and each other's expectations can be beneficial if established early on in the relationship.
I think when we think about it in terms of the interpersonal relationships, there can be some pros and cons to it, right? That also means that I'm taking the relational step of identifying that we're in a committed monogamous relationship. And we have certainly seen the social trends to where people are waiting longer to get into serious relationships.
According to the Pew Research Center, in 2016, the median age for a first marriage was age 27 for women and age 29 for men, roughly 7 years more than the median age in 1960. At the same time, more adults are living with a partner instead of marrying and raising children outside of marriage. So I wondered, how important is it to millennials to get married in their lives right now?
Whoa, to get married?
Not important. I can really take care of myself.
As of right now, it's not too important. But later on, as I get older, maybe in my later 20s, it might be a priority. Because my life isn't in order right now. So financially and maybe mentally too, I need to prepare myself for a marriage.
For me personally, it's non-existent. I do not care about it. I feel like people put too much of a stigma on marriage.
As of right now, it's not something that I want on the table. I think marriage before used to be based off of social expectations and then a way to secure like your wealth, your possessions. Now, the way that the economy is set up, people don't really have possessions to secure. People don't own homes like they used to. So getting married financially, what is the positive of that? There isn't really one. And then socially, no one really expects people to get married for the most part. Depending on your social class, it varies. You don't have to be married to have children now. Marriage isn't much of a priority. But for me, eventually, I do want that additional stability, that me and someone are on the same page. The fact that someone is legally obligated to love me is also a nice addition.
This is Monet Schlotterbeck with Fresno State Focus Radio Edition.
So dating has taken a different turn from what it used to be compared to today. Just like the life and upbringing of a college athlete can compare to another, Sabrina Kumar takes a look at three different college athletes and what their plans are for after college.
Riley Radke made history at Clovis Community College by being the first athlete ever to represent the school at a state championship meet for any sport.
I didn't decide I wanted to swim in college until after I graduated high school and I had already finished one semester at community. I was just going to go straight to community. I never even thought about going to a four-year. I just wanted to get my GE done.
Initially, Riley had no intention on competing at the collegiate level until a swim program started at Clovis Community back in 2015. She also didn't realize the great potential she had in swim until the season had progressed. It was a huge shock and thrill when Clovis Community College's head coach, Mark Bennett, for the swim and dive team, shared the news with Riley of her qualifying for the state championships.
I was shocked. Being the first person to make it to the state meet, I didn't realize how big of a deal it was at the time for the first season. Walked on the deck one day and Mark was like, "You're going to states." And I was like, "Okay, who else is going?" And he was like, "No one, you're the only one." And throughout the season, he didn't really tell me about states or hadn't mentioned it. Like, "Oh, you need to get a states cut." You know, I kind of just got them. And so that was pretty cool to like know that one, I'm the first person to make it, and two, I was the only one to make it, and three, I was female to make it.
Even though Riley competed at the state championships, she still missed that team component while competing.
I actually didn't have a good time because I needed my teammates there. You know, I felt a little lost without my team. But after I had swam and they had announced my name and I medaled and everything, it felt pretty cool.
There was a time when Riley wanted to literally throw in the towel when it came to swim, but she saw potential in herself and didn't want to quit.
In my second season at Clovis Community, where I was like, why am I doing this? Like, I'm so tired, and I just kind of was like, I don't like this. But I knew that I could do something good that season. My dad had played a huge role in it. I mean, he loved to see me succeed in swimming, and so I, as much as I say I swim for me, I swim for him.
Riley planned to stay in her hometown and was burnt out after swimming at the collegiate level for 2 years, despite getting an offer from Fresno Pacific University's swim and dive coach.
It was the FPU coach. He asked if I wanted to swim, and my automatic answer was no.
Even though Riley received a medal at the state championship competition, there are many moments of waiting and suspense to find out her overall scores.
I was pretty burnt out because I felt a lot more pressure to do well at states the second season. I had to swim in the morning, and then the very last heat swam at night. And so I had to wait all day and then wait for the last heat to swim and then see what place I got.
Though Riley medaled, she still was not satisfied or saw improvement the second time around when it came to the state championship meet.
I got sixth the first season and sixth the second season.
Despite having many accomplishments, Riley still felt kind of lost about her end to her athletic career.
After, I was just like, okay, well, like, it's over. Like, now what? You know, I don't have to go to practice. I don't have anything to do. I mean, I have all of these medals from conference and states, and they're just sitting in a box somewhere.
Riley plans in the future to continue with her career goals in the realm of athletics.
With my kinesiology major, I plan to coach, because I'm coaching now, and that's what I see myself doing, is running a high school water polo program and then eventually college while running that high school program.
Riley is currently coaching swim and water polo for younger kids. But at the same time, she also wants kids to enjoy their time swimming.
And I understand that when the kids that I coach come to practice, it's the same thing for them. It's just like a moment to get away.
Though swimming has come to a close in Riley's life, she still finds it as a big part of her life's journey.
And there was a time in my life where, like, that's all I had. That was my only outlet. And so going to practice was like my time to get away from everything. I think if I didn't have that, I'd be a much different person than I am today.
Fresno State's current senior swimmer, Samantha Giannetta, has a similar story. She started competing at an early age when she was around 12 years old, and it all started from a school announcement over the intercom. But what was surprising was when she first went to the pool to try out.
I didn't even know anything about swimming, and I saw there was only 8 lanes in the pool, and I was like, how are we all going to practice if there's only 8 lanes in the pool? We can only fit 8 people in the pool at a time. And then they were like, no, you put multiple people in each lane. And I was like, oh, gotcha.
Due to Samantha's busy schedule during the past 4 years, she practically needs to schedule an appointment to see some of her close friends.
Half a mile away from me, and I've seen them like maybe 3 or 4 times in the whole year. I have friends, like 2 good friends. And they literally live like half a mile away from me. And I've seen them like maybe 3 or 4 times in the whole year.
Although Samantha has enjoyed her years of swimming, she still feels that she has missed out on some aspects of college that she wished she would have had.
Like, I've never like gotten the true college experience where it's like, you know, you go out and you hang out with your friends and you go out to parties, then you go to like the tailgates before the football games. That's like never been a thing for me.
Samantha's last competition as a collegiate athlete will come to a close around March next semester in 2019. And she is looking forward to the days that will follow right after that day.
I think I'm probably gonna be happy on the last day of my competition. And I've talked to my mom about it already. It's gonna be my first conference championship that my mom is coming to out of all my 4 years of swimming. And she's like taking the time to be able to come and watch me swim. And so I told her, I was like, afterwards, mom, I was like, we can go out, we can celebrate, and like it'll finally be over because it's been a long 4 years. And I think I'm going to be excited to finally move forward with a different part of my life.
Although Samantha had a history of getting first or second place consecutively at swim meets during her high school years, but rather during her freshman year as a college athlete, it started off differently, leading to her swim coach at Fresno State, Dean Fleck, to change her swim events in order for her to even score any points at all.
College, I wasn't the best swimmer by far on my team when it came to dual meets, and she was getting frustrated because I wasn't scoring any points for the team. And when you come as a freshman, you're kind of expected to be faster than everybody else who's already on the team. So you build up as you get faster every year, and you build up coming in with those incoming freshmen, make your team better. She changed my events from the 200 and the 500, which I was not scoring in at all, to the 50 and the 100. And at that point, I was kind of like, I kind of got a little defeated, and I was like, why am I doing this anymore? And when I started scoring more points for the team, my confidence level started to go up a little bit.
After Samantha graduates in spring 2019, she plans to take some time away from the pool and venture into other fitness activities for fun, and not necessarily for competition.
I mean, I have a feeling a lot of it when I first get out of swimming is going to be probably just sitting and doing nothing. Oh, I don't have to wake up at 5 every morning for practice? Like, that's wonderful. Just enjoying not being an athlete for a while, but then probably getting into something else, like another side hobby, because so much of it has always been revolved around swimming and practice, and I have to be there, and it's not really a choice.
She still makes time to go and coach kids and to share the passion that she has for swimming with them.
Even as busy as it is, to still go out and coach the kids every night for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, because I enjoy it and it's part of my day that I don't want to give up.
Samantha has made sure over the 4 years of being a collegiate athlete to have a job lined up for her, or to at least have a plan after graduation, unlike some other athletes.
So my goal is to be able to finish out my last swim season, and I've been offered a grasp onto a coaching spot with Clovis West. I'm probably going to go straight into getting my teaching credential so that way I can start working as a PE teacher. It's my senior year now. I did everything that I could do to be the best that I could be at the end of my 4 years.
Jordan Murillo, who competed and was one of the team captains during her freshman year on Fresno State's inaugural swim and dive team back in 2008, talks about the rewards of coaching and how there is life after athletics.
When I graduated college, I think just like every other college graduate, you just kind of wait for job offers and your hands are in your pocket and you're just kind of waiting for the next move, but you just become stagnant. My last swim meet, I had no intent to do any sort of competition following that. I was excited. I was in shock. I wouldn't say sad, but it was more so overwhelmed because my swimming career was coming to an end. I think there's a handful of athletes, but my experience is a lot of athletes that, like, they look back and they think, you know, I could have done so much more. And I feel that way now, but, you know, at the end of the day, I'm happy with the route I took. I'm coaching and it's somewhere I feel like I'm definitely supposed to be. I have a number of friends that had taken the professional route to continue swimming after college. It takes a different kind of person to be able to do that, and it's amazing. It just definitely wasn't something that I wanted to do. I enjoyed coaching, and I, you know, was happy with how I left swimming, my swimming career as an athlete. Just starting a new chapter as a coach was what I wanted to do.
Many athletes wonder what they're going to do after they compete. After all, they've been doing it for such a long time since they were young children that it's a new experience to venture and do different things outside of the realm of athletics. But those who still want to pursue athletics have enough experience to go out and to market themselves, and that there is life after athletics even if they don't want to take that route. Sabrina Kumar, Fresno State Focus Radio Edition.
Wow, now that I think about it, our lives are like a sequel. Except, our sequel doesn't exactly repeat itself. Fernando Martinez tackles the idea of movies and sequels. And maybe it can be considered lazy writing, or maybe writers are all out of ideas.
He's, you know, one of the best ever. Hard to compare him to Jordan because they're different positions. It's a different game now. LeBron is nowhere near the legends of Michael Jordan.
I think that he's not Michael Jordan, but like right now in our current generation, he's basically our Michael Jordan.
With the second installment of Looney Tunes confirmed, it brought up the question, how do sequels work? Do they work? In an interview with professor and filmmaker Aaron Schulke, we discuss all aspects of a sequel.
As I tend not to really like sequels very much.
But when it comes to the second installment of Space Jam, Aaron doesn't see it as a sequel, but sees it as more of a revival.
Almost like a revival. You know, you're going to get you're getting the band back together, so to speak, in this, the cinematic equivalent of that. And so what you were really capitalizing on really is more nostalgia than like narrative flow. To me, the main problem exists with sequels sort of becoming formulaic or derivative, almost becomes a lazy form of cinematic storytelling.
For all the fans out there, let's hope this is not the case for the second installment of Space Jam 2, especially with the new addition of LeBron James. Fernando Martinez, Fresno State Focus, Radio Edition.
You are listening to 90.7 KFSR. Fresno is not well known for having a comedy scene, but there is a group of people trying to change that. About 7 or 8 of them that they keep going around into like different bars and clubs here in town. Just not Fresno, but also Clovis. They go around and they do stand-up scenes, and it's getting quite popular, really. And in the middle of that group, there's a Fresno State alumna leading the way.
Like, I look like the kind of person who tries to pay their child support in tabs of acid. I feel like one more looks like joke.
Comedian Trevor Richardson performing at the Midwest South Stadium in downtown Fresno for 2B Tuesday's comedy show.
Like, I look like a homeless IT department Jesus.
Hosted by Karen Geffen and Andrew Salamo, the event features 6 comedians, all part of what they call the Fresno stand-up scene. Geffen, who is a comedian herself, explains how she decided to bring a comedy show to downtown Fresno.
I'm a Fresno State alumni. I graduated in 2015, and while I was there, I was part of USC Productions, and I was an event coordinator with them for 2 years as well, so that kind of like sparked something in me. I'm like, oh, I like producing events just as much as I like performing as well. So the skills I learned in networking, all that kind of stuff from productions really helped me kind of transition into our new our new endeavor over here. So it's this is our first show at Bitwise, and they've been grateful enough to let us use the building, and it's a process.
Geffen and Salamo talked to us about how they got to host their own comedy show at Bitwise South Stadium Theater.
We were just looking for pretty much anyone who would take
us. Yeah, we were just looking for a venue that would host comedy like at least once a week or once a month. Mm-hmm. And luckily we found Bitwise Theater, and it seems like a great opportunity to continue doing comedy here in downtown Fresno.
Because there's a great scene in Fresno as far as, like, there's always shows going on, there's open mics. We also host an open mic Thursday nights at Fresno City Vapor. It's on Bullard and First. So it's 21 and over, but that's the only catch, really. But, yeah, it's just we wanted to produce stuff, and this is our first time doing it here and just really trying to get the word out.
Geffen and Salamo mentioned how they were able to get all the comedians for the show.
We wanted to find a way to highlight local talent, and these are our friends, too, so that makes it easier to just message you, hey, you want to do a show? Of course. So
Yeah, it's definitely like their talents that are on the rise. I think they should be playing places like in LA and the Bay Area where there's constant action going on. And they're really talented, and we wanted to showcase like the best that we have here in Fresno.
Comedian Ali O'Leary, who opened up the event, was really excited about performing at Bitwise.
This is beautiful. This is a huge theater, and, you know, wish there was a larger crowd, but we will get there with time. This is our first show for the 2-Bit Tuesdays that Carmen is throwing with Andrew, so we will definitely build a following, I'm sure, but it's beautiful, and I'm glad to have this pretty stage.
Audience member Jonathan Ira was excited to see stand-up comedy in downtown Fresno.
I was actually downtown, and I said, let me drive down the block, come here, and hey, it was interesting. Glad I came. We got nothing else, then I'll be here next month.
Geffen talks about the future of this event.
Somewhat of a slow build, but we want this to eventually become like a recognized event. Like people know, like, oh, it's Tuesday, second Tuesday, let's go to this thing. You know, like Art Hop is like the first Thursday. People understand, like, you know, there's like a timeline, I guess.
Yeah.
As far as what people associate with like events in downtown. So eventually we'd love to have like, oh yeah, it's second Tuesday, let's go to the comedy show. Yeah.
Bitwise is like a technology kind of hub that a lot of people go there to start their own companies, to start their own, basically startups. And they go there and they use that area to form their own companies and stuff. but it's mainly for technology. But it's funny that they're using it for, well, it's not funny, but it's interesting that they're using it for comedy.
When's the next performance?
They'll be having their second show on Tuesday, on the 13th of this month. So you should go check them out.
Yes, definitely something I'll have to do. And that's a wrap for our show this week. Fresno State Focus Radio Edition is produced by Professor Faith Sidlow for the Department of Media Communications and Journalism.
Our stories and interviews are produced and edited by Monet Slaughterback, Sabrina Kumar, Fernando Martinez, and me, Jorge Rodriguez.
This program is produced in collaboration with 90.7 KFSR for Fresno State Focus Radio Edition. I'm Casti Lopez.
And I'm Jorge Rodriguez. Have a great morning.
KFSR presents Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, Saturday mornings at 5. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.